The topic that I wanted to discuss today is the topic of Tanis Esther. When one looks at all of the fast days that we have, now it's always important to remember that, as I tell my students all the time, right? There are obviously four major fast days, Tzom Gedalia, Aser B'Teves, Aser B'Tammuz, Tosh B'Av. Then there is Yom Kippur, which is, you know, a fast day that is only a fast day in the sense that we are fasting on it, but it's really a yontif, right? Yom Kippur is one of the greatest Yom Tovim that we have. One of the ways we celebrate Yom Kippur is through fasting, but it's not a sad day like the other of the Arba Taniyos are, right? And then, finally, you have Tanis Esther. And in Tanis Esther is really its own very, very unique fast. And if I were to ask any of you, in what way is the fast of Tanis Esther that much different? Well, there are many ways. First of all, as we'll see, like any year, and for sure in a year like this, where we are bumping back, so to speak, Tanis Esther to way before Purim, generally, we push fast days ahead, the Gemara tells us, right? If Tisha B'Av is on a Shabbos or on a Friday, we don't fast on Thursday, we don't fast on Wednesday, we bump that all the way to Sunday, because we don't want to be makdim paranios, the Gemara says. We don't want to talk about bad stuff earlier. We want to talk about the good. We want to push it off as far as we can, right? As far as we can. But when it comes to Tanis Esther, we know that we're already going to fast a few days before Purim. We're already going to fast a few days before Purim. That is part of the nature of what makes Aser B'Teves so unique. Not only that, but the slichos that we say, when one looks at the slichos that one says on a Tanis Esther, it is actually very, very unique. They are not like, so to speak, regular slichos, which are sadder, they're more somber, it's a little more depressing, so to speak. The slichos that we say on Tanis Esther are actually much more uplifting, they are much more positive, and because we have to figure out what exactly is the nature of Tanis Esther. What exactly are we really, really fasting, you know, the fast is all about? So what we're going to do is look into the nature of Tanis Esther. Right? What is this fast? So if you were to ask people, okay, when is Tanis Esther? Why is the reason we are fasting on Tanis Esther? Here we go. I'm going to put the Mar Makomos here in a second. When one asks, why are we fasting Tanis Esther? So the easiest answer is, why am I fasting on Tanis Esther? Because that's when Esther went ahead and Esther fasted. And there are those that believe of that opinion, that Esther fasted before she goes to speak to the king, right? One of the most important moments of the Megillah is Esther's courage to go ahead and to speak to the king. She risks her life. There are rules in Persia. One of the rules are you're not allowed to go speak to the king without being told. And if she goes, she could risk her life. And after the fourth paragraph of the Megillah, when Esther really is motivated by Mordechai to go speak to Ahasuerus, she risks her life. And she begins by fasting on, before she goes to speak to the king. The problem is that, and then I just shared the Mar Makomos there, but the problem is that that's not really when she fasts, because Esther does not really fast during the month of Adar. The month of Adar is when the Jews are saved, but the month that Esther fasts is really Pesach. Pesach is Esther fasts, as the Medrash tells us there in Source number 7, Esther says, "Knos as kol haYehudim." Of course, Esther's way of gathering the Jews together, fixing some of the issues that the Jews were divided and weren't united. So what Esther does, the approach that Esther takes to achieve Geula and Yeshua is to unite the Jewish people together. So Esther decides, before she goes speak to the king, "Leich knos as kol haYehudim." But not only Leich Kenos as Kol HaYehudim, to gather the Jews simply because that's what she wants to do. If anything, that was part of the issue the Jewish people had. The Jewish people had an issue that they weren't united, that they were divided. It's what Haman, when Haman says, Yeshno Amefuzar Umufurad, he is not just saying they're scattered, hey Achashverosh, if we kill them, you won't even notice it. You won't notice that there was a few more deaths in your kingdom, because they're so spread out, it won't leave like a bald spot, the Gemara says, if we kill them. But really what Haman is talking about is the Jewish people. The Jews are mefuzar, the mefura, they're spread out, they're not united. So Esther sees Leich Kenos as Kol HaYehudim. So in order to unite the Jewish people together, what does Esther do? She unites them. But that, the Medrash tells us, is actually in the month of Nisan. Right? It's the month of Nisan. As to unites them, the Medrash tells us here in source number 7, when was this? Yud Gimel, Yud Dalet, and Tesv of Nisan. So they said, what do you mean? That's the day of Pesach. And Esther responds, what do you mean? If we don't do this now, there won't ever be a Pesach again. I am going to go speak to the king right now. This is an important part. We have to fast. So we have to, it's going to be Pesach. Okay. We're going to fast this year. So that year in Shushan, there was no Seder. So it could be that is one camp of why, of approaches to why we fast on Tanis Esther. The Tanis Esther commemorates the fasting that Esther does before she goes to speak to the king. And that's why the halacha tells us, there's a fascinating comment in the Shulchan Aruch, that there are those that fast 3 days. Yish mis'anim, the Shulchan Aruch, and Simen, Tav, Reish, Pei, Vav, Yish mis'anim, Gimel, Yamim, Zecher, Latanis, Esther. Right, we should fast 3 days because of what Esther, of how Esther fasted. But that is not the accepted approach. Okay, and what makes this even more complicated is that there is something called Megillas Tainus, which is a sefer, which you know, the question is how much we hold of it today. But it listed all the days that we used to not, say Tachnun on, had a little bit of like a Yom Tov feel to them. And any of those days, except for Chanukah and Purim, which we still do, you can't fast the day before the day after. And yet here we are, that we're going in and we're fasting the day before Pesach, the day before Purim. So one approach is, yeah, we're fasting because that is when Esther fasted before she went to speak to the, to the king. So the Beis Yosef, though, who cites the Shibulei HaLeket, who quotes Rashi. The Rashi says that this Tainus Esther, it's not a Derabanan, it's not a De'oraisa, but really, it's commemorating a custom. What is that custom? Well, the Megillah tells us that another reason that we might be fasting in the sources, look in source number 8 and source number 9. But one of the reasons, Rashi says, it's a custom that because the Jews fasted in the wake of Haman's decrees, Rashi, unlike the Rabbeinu Tam, implies that really the commemoration of Tainus Esther is actually about the Jews preparing to go speak to Ahasuerush to save the Jews. Later in the Megillah, after Haman is killed, there's still a battle. The decree against the Jewish people was still out there. And if there is a decree to kill the Jews, in Persia, everything goes by decrees and by rules and by protocols. You cannot simply jump, Haman's dead, so let's get rid of it. The reason we actually have Purim is because we were saved from a war against the Persians. So the Rashi is of the approach that really we are fasting because we had to prepare before this battle, against the Persian army. And the Medrash tells us that's approach number one. Maybe it's approach number two. We saw that maybe we're fasting, commemorating those 3 days. That Shulchan Aruch says we fast 3 days because that took a lot of courage and we are sort of representing that. And the third camp, before we really develop what's going on in Tainus Esther, just the third approach is you have some that say it's just a custom. You have some that say it's because Esther fasted before she spoke to the king. And the Rabbeinu Tam, who was quoted by the Rush in Megillah, adopts a middle approach. The Rabbeinu Tam says, Tainus Esther, it's not a minhag, it's a derabanan. And that comes from the fact that the Gemara in Megillah, in source number 8, the Gemara in Megillah describes that, how do I know certain days that I can say the Megillah from? Yud Aleph, the 11th, the 12th, how do I, sources of how early you can read the Megillah. We obviously read the Megillah on the 14th. How do I know I could bump it back even to the 11th? So the Gemara has to give sources for each one. But when it comes to the 13th of Adar, the Gemara says, well, that doesn't need a source because that is Zman Kihila. What is a Zman Kihila? Time for gathering. So Rashi interprets that as a historical event of the Jewish people. They gathered together to defend themselves from those that wanted to implement Haman's decree. Right? They were going to kill us, so we davened. We gathered together and we davened. Rabbeinu Tam, though, in this middle approach, the Rabbeinu Tam says the following. Rabbeinu Tam's approach is like this. He reads the Gemara that everybody gathered to observe Tainus Esther to commemorate the fast that the Jews engaged in before battle. Meaning that Gemara is the sole source of Tainus Esther. That it's not the pasuk that Rashi brings me into the ninth perek, but really all of this has to do with a Zman Kihila. It was a gathering time for people to be together. It was a gathering time for the Jews. That is what Rashi said. That is what Rabbeinu Tam said. If you look in source number 11, in the She'iltos of, if you don't have the source, it's okay, the She'iltos of Rav Achai Gaon. So in the She'iltos of Rav Achai Gaon, he says the same thing, that the Jews gathered to fast and recite Slichos, and that's the basis of the 13th of Adar. So those are a number of approaches. Maybe Tanis Esther is just what Esther did before she spoke to the king. Ah, that happened way back when, in Nisan. It's going to be another year before we're saved. Okay, but we're commemorating it now. It could be that it's when we fasted in preparation of the war that we were going to have to fight. Maybe, or maybe it's the sort of this middle approach that it's a day of gathering that the Jews did. But the real understanding of Tanis Esther is, what is the nature of the fast? What are we doing on Tanis Esther? The Ravid, the Ravid, who is cited by the Ran, says the real source, the Megillah. So as you go through all these different sources as to why we're fasting, the nature of our fasting, all the other fast days, you know why we're fasting. The walls fell down, the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed. But what exactly is the source? So one of the psukim that we just quoted at the end of the ninth Parak of the Megillah, almost said the Megillah is over. Is lekayim simeah purim ma'ila bizmanehem kasher kiyamel Mordechai Yehudi v'Esther Amalka. You should establish Purim like they did, Mordechai and Esther. V'chasher kimu al nafshom v'al zaram, just like they did. We should have our children. Divrei hatzomos v'za'akasam. Tzomos are fast days. So the way we are going to celebrate Purim is divrei atzomos v'za'akasam. So, when the Megillah says that Esther and Mordechai said, and they said, all right, Jews, listen, there's a lot of letters in the Megillah. You're going to observe Purim just like you did. And the Ravid says, what it means, divrei atzomos, that means Tanis Esther. That means they have to fast. That it's not a custom. It's an obligation based in divrei, it's not a deraisa, of course, but we'll call divrei kabbalah. It's based on words in ksuvim that we have to fast because there's something here. So what we're really arguing about is the nature of Tanis Esther. The nature of Tanis Esther is unlike every other fast day that we have. Rabbi Soloveitchik, and this is cited by many earlier Rishonim as well, by the Kolbo and by others, that what we're arguing about is what is Tanis Esther? Is Tanis Esther, like every other fast day, and we're sad, and we're a little bit, introspective, and we're doing tshuva, which of course we're always trying to do. But really, Tanis Esther, says Rabbi Soloveitchik, the end of source number 12, the last number of lines, I'll just read it aloud. Tanis Esther shayaches v'yisoda le'inin persume nisa. That the role of Tanis Esther is as important as the Pursume Nisa of Purim. And it is Shayach, the Purim Atzmo. It is connected to Purim itself. It is not, like as other Rishonim call it, it's not a sad day. It's what other Rishonim will call a Tanis Shel Simcha. Meaning, often we look at Tanis Esther in the following way. I have Tanis Esther and I fast. Tanis Esther is over, and I move it aside, and then I celebrate Purim, and I dance, and I eat, and I deliver Mishloach Manos, and I do all the mitzvot Hayom. But really, Tanis Esther is part of the nature of the celebration of Purim. And that's why there's a number of fascinating nafka minas, just to understand a little bit in halacha, because it is this, this happy, so to speak, fast day. It's not sad. It's generally one of the reasons that children fasted, because it's not about avelus. It's why we can bump it earlier. Why do I bump this fast all the way earlier to Thursday, as opposed to pushing off like Tisha B'Av, Shavuos, or B'Tammuz? Because it is not a sad day. It's really a happy day. And to understand this, we have to look in the Megillah a little bit. In the Megillah, the Jews are in this situation. We have to realize, what are they davening for? The Gemara tells us in source number 13, they asked Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, "Mivnei machai v'shon in shayisol shemosa ador kali." What happened, right? What happened in the generation of the Purim story? What happened that made everybody be in the situation? Right? All of a sudden, the Jews wake up. Haman's decree to kill them, and the Jews look around. Oh my gosh. Meaning, what happened? Where did this start? Why are we in this situation? Which is what Jews should always be asking. And the Gemara gives a very, very clear answer, right? Often you don't find, you know, Rabbi, why did this happen? It happened for mixed dancing. Here you have a direct answer. The Gemara says, Shenanu misudaso shel Rasha. The Jewish people were nehene from the Seuda. Now, Achashverosh makes a party. The Jews go to the party. Whether or not they should or shouldn't have is a great question. But maybe they didn't have a choice. They're living under Persia rule. They're living in a situation that was not really conducive to their religious growth. They're really, so to speak, they're stuck. But they go. But you could go somewhere and go, and you can go somewhere and be a little bit apprehensive, a little bit more, you know, resilient in how much you're going to enjoy the party. The Gemara says they didn't just go to the Seuda. The Gemara says they were nehene from that Seuda. They enjoyed it. What does it mean they enjoyed it? They looked around in their life in exile. It was great. It was great. Their pride of Jews were gone. Here is a Jewish nation that had been living in exile that should have gone back to Israel already, as we'll see in a little bit. Right? As the Navi tells them, Yirmiyahu says, 70 years, it's going to last. 70 years, they're going to go back. And the Sefer HaKuzari, as I quote a little bit later, we'll come back, but the Sefer HaKuzari tells us that the Jews should have gone back, and had they gone back, this would have been over. Mashiach would have come. They don't go back, and they stay in exile. Know that they stay, they enjoy, they are living a life in Gullus, and it's good. Exile life is very good. It's enjoyable. They're having a good time. They don't see the fault in what they're doing. And in fact, if you look in the next source, in source number 14, in the Megillah itself, in the Gemilla, the Megillah itself, there is a fascinating code. Apologize. Reb Leib Chasman, who's a Shiva of the Chevron Yeshiva and a Sefer of the Or HaShem, writes the following. If you look in the Megillah, you find like a code. This code is between Esther and Mordechai. They have this go-between, between the messenger of Asach, the Gemara says it's Daniel, go back and forth. So already Esther has become the queen. This Perek Dalet is Mordechai's push. Esther, let's go, let's go, let's go, let's go. You got to speak to the king. Esther's response back, but it's all going through Asach. And the pasuk says, the pasuk, hey, vatikra Esther la'asach, misarisa emach shemin lefonah, vatitzavel Mordechai la'das, malze ve'al maze. Esther says to Asach, go find out what's this and what's that. That is a strange word. Ladas malze ve'al maze. And listen to the response of Mordechai. Mordechai responds, v'yitzei Asach Mordechai rochaver shevlem, shara melech, pasuk zayin, v'yagalo Mordechai eis kol asher karau. Everything that is happening. You cannot have gotten a more vague conversation. Hey, how's it going? Everything's fine. The worst two words in the English language are "it's fine." Esther says, "What's happening?" Ladas malzevi al mazeh, and Mordechai says, "Asher karo'u." So Rabbi Chasman and Sefer Or HaShem suggests is an amazing thing. Listen to this. He says these words "zeh" are actually taken, not randomly taken, but it's actually taking us all the way back in Tanakh, all the way back to Torah. If you look at source 15, when the Jewish people say, Zeh keli v'anveyu. Zeh keli v'anveyu. This idea of Zeh keli v'anveyu, ladas malzeh ve'amazeh, the word zeh. Where are the Jews? What's happening, Mordechai? Why did we end up in this situation? Why is there a decree against the Jewish people? Why is there an evil annihilator that wants to wipe us out? What did we do wrong? What's the status of the Jewish people right now? Mazeh v'amazeh, which zeh is it? Is it the zeh of Az Yashir, of connection, of seeing HaKadosh Baruch Hu, of seeing the miracles and Kriyas Yamsuf, and the amazing connection the Jews had when they left Mitzrayim? Is that where we are? Are we that zeh, so to speak? Right? Is that where we are? Or potentially, are we not like that? Maybe we are the Jews of the next source. You'll see there, right, in source number 16. Vayivan vayir Moshe min har in Parshas Kisisa. And he has the luchos, mizeh, umizehim kisuvim. Right? Why is this happening? Are these the Jews that are in love with their Moshe Shalom or they're committing the sin of the Egel? Which one is it? Which zeh are the Jewish people right now? And Mordechai responds. He says, "Eis kol asher karou." Karou is not just a random language, a random word, so to speak. The word karou is taken from Amalek, asher karcha baderech. The pasuk tells us in the parashas Kisetzi, asher karcha baderech. Mordechai is saying the Jews, they've cooled down. Right? Amalek is from the word karcha. Because when every other nation looked at the Jewish people and said, I will not touch them. They beat up the Egyptians. They did all the makos. I will not get near them. Part of the way. Let the Jews pass. Amalek said, whatever they did, it's irrelevant. There's no God. There's nothing. That is how the Amalek is the only nation that wants to attack us. They cooled us down, so to speak. And Mordechai is saying, Eis kasher karou. Karou, he is saying, look at where the Jews are in exile. Look at where they are. Achashverosh is making a party because, as the Gemara tells us, Achashverosh has calculated, the Gemara Megillah and Daf Yod Aleph says that he calculated how long the exile was. And when the time was up, and they don't go, he goes on Mazel Tov, he says. Achashverosh is thrilled. He's thrilled. The Jews are a functioning, healthful part of society. The time for the redemption has come. 70 years are up. We know Koresh had told them ready to go back. They don't go back. And Achashverosh is, they're staying. How do I know they want to stay with me? Because they don't just come to my Seuda. They enjoy it. They like it. They're a part of it. This culture, this assimilation, this lack of religion and excitement and passion and involvement and engagement. Done. They're part of Persia. And he throws a party. And at that party, they enjoy it. They really, you can tell when someone is enjoying the party and when someone isn't enjoying the party. So this is why the Jews, they don't leave. And that's why he takes out the kalim in the first paragraph of the Megillah. When he makes this party to celebrate the fact that they're staying, what does he take out? Not only does he take out the kalim, mikalim shonim, to show how powerful he is as a king, as an emperor. Look at this nation that everybody thought wasn't going to be defeated. I defeated them. I wiped them out. I own the spoils of the Jewish people. Like Lahavdil, Hitler, Yimach Shmo, the museum of the Jewish people. Right? Look what I did. Look what I conquered. But he takes out the kalim because he says, you don't care. Here it is. Here's whatever kalim he took out. And when you lay in that pause, like v'kelim, mikelim, shonim, it's eicha, it's sadness, because this is a moment in Jewish history that is terrible. Here we are, we're in exile. We know it's going to end. It's not 1,000 years old. It's 70 years earlier. There were people that might have lived 70 years earlier and knew what it felt like. And yet, when Achashverosh takes out those kelim, they don't seem to mind. They don't seem to mind. So Esther asks Mordechai, what's happening out there? And Mordechai's response is, it's not good. And that's potentially one of the reasons that Mordechai refuses to bow down to Haman. By the third parak of the Megillah, the catalyst for actually what motivates Haman to want to kill Mordechai, which is fascinating, and the word ironic is used a lot in the Megillah, but it's Hashem's orchestration of everything, because what Haman's reason of why I want to wipe out Mordechai is the reason he dies. In fact, we sing in Mo's Sur, on Chanukah, v'ga'ava so nishbasa, that his haughtiness ruins him. But why does Mordechai, when all the other dayanim, v'chol avdei ha-melech, all the dayanim, all the people are bowing down to Haman, why is it that Mordechai refuses? So there's a lot of explanations. Maybe it's potentially that he was wearing an avodah zarah on his neck, as the Ibn Ezra says. So, or maybe as Rashi says, he viewed himself, Haman, as his own god. But it was a nationalistic concern. As the Sefer Kuzey writes here in Source 21, had they gone back, had the Jews answered the call and said, let's go, let's bring back to Israel, then everything would have been okay. And when Mordechai sees this, he says, oh my gosh, this is not only about our people or avodah, this is about identity. I am not going to bow down because I want to show the people this is not what we do. We bow down onto the Ribono Shel Olam. And if you're going to tell me, Mordechai, you got to risk your life, you don't die for these things, he'll answer you, absolutely. This is one of those times then. Because the Jewish people were so far gone in exile. And by the way, it only took him 70 years. It's not 2,500 years. 70 years already, and they were already caught up in all of this. So Mordechai's refusal to bow down. You know, I once shared some of the stories. You hear about, like, you know, some of the refusings, the Yosef Mendeleviches, some of the things they refused. You know, he refused to take off his yarmulke. He refused to do certain things that, of course, if you ask anybody, die, or I'm going to take off, or take off your yarmulke, of course you take off your yarmulke. It's not a shaila. There's no rabbi who will tell you that. But in terms of persecution, and in terms of identity, and in terms of standing up for yourself, he felt, and rightfully so, I'm not going to give in. Right? We have certain shilas in the Holocaust, for example. Certain shilas in shuvas that were asked of Gedolim, Rav Chaim Oshri, Rav Shmuel Leib Aronson, and Zalei Merorus, that people wanted to know, even if the halacha would tell them to do X, violate Y, they don't want to give in. They don't want to show the Nazis that they want to. Even if the halacha might tell them they don't have to, they wanted to. They want to risk their life to go see the menorah, hear the shofar, find the sitter. They want to risk their life to do certain things or to avoid certain averos. It's exactly what Mordechai is doing. Right? What Mordechai is doing in the Megillah is telling the people of Persia, this is not what we do. This is not what we do. And in this context, we can now understand the tshuva of the Purim story. Says Reb Aaron Lichtenstein in source 22, on reflecting on the reality of the Purim story, there's presumably a variety of factors that are relevant for this process. The story is, among others, a story of sin and tshuva. The Megillah itself does not address this directly, but emerges from the lines, and Chazal emphasized it. To read the Megillah that is sensitive to these issues should note whether it's Esther's call of Leich Chanos as Kol HaYehudim, or later because they partook of the Suda, and the underlying, whatever the particular explanation, the religious state of the Jewish people at the time of the total led to total destruction being decreed against the individual and nation. The tshuva, which needed to follow, needed to take this into account. And this is really one very, very important point. Don't look at Tanis Esther and say, okay, well, the Jews fasted and we're fasting and then we have Purim. The reason we have Tanis Esther, the reason the Ravid said earlier that it's a halacha to fast is because Esther said, Divrei Hatzomos v'Zayin Kasam. Do you know how we're going to fight off this apathy, to fight off the indifference and the assimilation and the feeling that we are completely, you know, just enmeshed in Persia? We're going to fast. Right? We're going to fast. What day, what vehicle makes you feel more connected than removing yourself from this world? Davening, Tehillim, and really reconnecting with the Ribbono Shel Olam. Says Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. Chazal understood, and this is a beautiful honor of Rav Aaron. Chazal understood the event of the Megillah not simply as a means to solve the immediate crisis via fasting and prayer. They saw the reaction as being one of an overall spiritual uplifting. This tshuva, the tshuva is understood not simply as a response to crisis, rather inspired by the crisis. They recognized the perverse culture of Ahasuerus' empire. So before they lost their uniqueness, right? Mordechai wouldn't kneel or bow. That's proud Jewish identity. What are we doing floating around Shushan in this culture of moral impropriety? Right? How often? Megillas Esther is such an important wake-up call. How often, even in us, we live in Baruch Hashem, we live in beautiful communities with wonderful schools and shuls and batei midrashim and kolels and chesed organizations. But how often do we sometimes go through life not realizing how the world around us affects us? Yes, we're supposed to live in the modern world, but we also have to keep certain things out, right? There's Jewish identity, there's proud identity in the Megillah when it comes to Mordechai, who wakes up the Jewish people. So what says Rav Aaron in the end, one who reads the Megillah senses the drama of danger and salvation, but at the same time, despite of God's name, one senses the divine presence. It's part of the drama. Meaning, Tanis Esther is the beginning part of Purim. How were we able to get to a Purim state? How are we able to get to a place where we could say, Hashem saved us? We didn't just end up at Purim willy-nilly. All of a sudden, we didn't wake up and, oh my gosh, we beat the Persian army, and now let's celebrate. We had to reconnect. It's clear in the Megillah. It's clear in how Esther talks to Mordechai. It's clear in Esther's response to Mordechai. We need a spiritual awakening. Esther says to Mordechai, and it's fascinating, I found the following. You know, we know there are people, whether we call them you know, it might not be the right term. Some people call them, you know, whether conversos, Imranos. But one of the fast days that they most connected with was the day of Esther, of Tanis Esther. Because to them, people that, you know, had were either forced to convert, and if not, they were going to die. So some people converted, right? Some people became converted to Christianity. Some people died on Kiddush Hashem. The Arachayim HaKadosh points out a fascinating thing that the intellectuals, he said, the smart ones, they all converted. And the average Joe, the layman, who had simple Amun and Hashem, died on Kiddush Hashem. And there were those that outwardly converted, but inwardly were still, obviously, were still Jews, right? You know, whatever exactly that means. They went to church and did certain things, but in their house, maybe they were Jews. They very much connected with this notion of Tanis Esther, this hidden identity, who I am as a person, because really what's happening in the story of Purim is a reawakening of this Jewish pride. And I've said this over the last few weeks, as we approach this Purim very differently than we've approached any Purim in recent memory, it should create a different mindset for us and motivate us in a different way. You know, and while we'll still, you know, sing and dance and Mishloach Manos and celebrate Purim and its real simcha, the note of this Purim, a notion of spiritual awakening, reconnection, right? The tzitzis wearing, the Am Yisrael chais. But I shared in the drasha that I gave after the mission we took to Israel that, you know, when I watched a group of secular Israelis singing, you know, seeing the pictures and the videos is one thing, but singing and dancing to the words of Yishai Ribo and his, all of his Torah that he's learned in those songs, and we're seeing that people from the displaced communities, not religious, but singing, you know, Gesher Tzar Me'od, Va'olam Lo Lefachik, those things. This is a Purim where we can understand the identity that has been reawakened in the Jewish people, both of those that were already awakened and those that were not. Whether it's the Shmira Shabbos people, whether it's those that are, you know, whatever, the Chiloni soldiers that are putting on tzitzis, the that are wearing yarmulkes, that are saying brachos, that are connecting with the Ribono Shalom. This is what happens in the Megillah. And this can help us understand why is it that we read the Megillah twice. When we read the Megillah twice, the Gemara tells us in Source 24, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says, we read it twice, what, Bayom Shenemar, that I cry out to Hashem, he doesn't answer. Okay? But if you look in Rabbi Chelbo, in the underline, he quotes, I don't know if I read it twice. And Rabbi Soloveitchik asks something actually very simple. Rabbi Soloveitchik says those two psukim are very, very different. Right? The psukim of, you know, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, it's a book of sorrow and of misery. Hashem cries out and we cry out, Hashem doesn't answer. But if you go to Ula, it's Thanksgiving. So Rabbi Soloveitchik explained that the nature of Purim changes, right? It's not just a day of eating and drinking, but rather it's really a day with associated with connection, with introspection, he says, because the whole idea of Tanis Esther, he says, is inherent in the Yom Tov of Purim. It says, rest on this question of whether Purim is a day of tefillah or celebration. And the answer is that it's both. Because man, he explains, is both great, but also has these moments existentially where he's like, what's going on in this world? And that's really what the story of the Megillah is about. The story of the Megillah and the story of Tanis Esther is the progression. It's the progression that a person has, right? So when we get to Purim, how did we get to a point where we can celebrate? How did we get to a point where we can sit there and listen to the Megillah and deliver Mishloach Manos? Because we went through a Tanis Esther response. Because we went through an understanding that the Jews in the Megillah realized this is not the right thing for us. It's not okay to be so apathetic, to be so immersed in the world of Persia. We need to, so to speak, snap out of it. And the way to do that is to gather the Jews together, to fast, to molai, atoch leval tishtu, to daven, to do tehillim. What we have seen in our own lives in the last number of months, right? Even if a person, right, is saying a little bit more tillin than they ever have, they're finding a little bit of those moments more for God than they ever were. They were very vulnerable. They were very vulnerable. Brene Brown writes often about the idea of vulnerability. We need to be vulnerable. We need to be open. We need to realize this is what the Jews did in the Megillah. Something's off. Something's wrong. This is not fitting. So the response before the battle was this connection. That's why when the Pasuk says, Divrei Hatzomos v'za'akosam. The Ravid says, yeah, this is the Divrei Hatzomos. The Divrei Hatzomos, the fasting that we're doing, is not simply a fasting because they fasted. It is the exact way we got to salvation, to Yeshua, and to Geula. That's why we can never bump Tanis Esther. At first, it'll be weird. We want to celebrate Purim on Sunday and then Tanis Esther on Monday. But in order for me to appreciate Purim, I need to have Tanis Esther. I need to understand how the Jews were able to get to where they got to. And this really is why Tanis Esther is such an important part of the day. You know, usually we associate Purim as a very normal day, right? It's Matanas Lev Yonim, Mishloach Manos. We saw the other week, we don't make a bracha. It's very mundane. It's very, you know, in this world kind of Yom Tov feel. It doesn't have the tefillah and the, you know, the davenings like another Yom Tov has. So the first answer is not so true. You should spend some time davening on Purim. It's a very important day. But the other answer is, no, you really are doing this because that's Tanis Esther. Tanis Esther is the spiritual part of this Yom Tov, and Purim is maybe the physical part of that Yom Tov, right? And that's how we do it as a kehillah. Shared values, shared growth, shared suffering, right? Rav Lichtenstein pointed out, in the beginning of the Megillah, the Jews are ish v'ish, and at the end they're kenosis kol ha'yudim, they blend together. And Rav Funder says, the same way the Jews felt, Vayichan Sham Yisrael Neged Ahar, right? That they felt united when they accepted the Torah. That's how we feel in Purim. That's how we should feel in Purim. United together. United together. So Tanis Esther in Purim, yes, it might be the fasting that we did before the battle against the army. It might be the fasting that Esther did before she spoke to the king. But it's also about why we merited Yeshua. We merited Yeshua because Esther says what's happening and Mordechai says it's not good. Eis kasher karo. They're there. They're eating. They're enjoying. They're part of this culture. And yeah, that doesn't mean they're not going to Minyan. It doesn't mean they're not going to the Beis Medrash. It doesn't mean they're not doing Chesed. It doesn't mean they're violating Shabbos and not saying brachos and not wearing tzitzis and not wearing tefillin. They're doing all of those things. But they're also immersed and they're also involved in the culture. And they're also let it seep into who they are as a person. They're doing both. And that doesn't work. Who we are as a Jew is a Jew. I might be involved in the world around me, but I am. I'm an Evan Hashem through and through. So Mordechai's response gets Esther all worried. And she doesn't say, oh my gosh, this is bad. Let me go speak to the king right now. In order for us to save the day, she's gonna implement her own plan. But before she does that, it's kenos es kol ha'yehudim. It's gather together, join together, daven together, connect together, find Hashem together. And then that's the way that we'll get to the Yeshua. That's the way that we'll get to this idea of, we say, Trosim Yisrael Netzah, that we're going to be forever, because the eternity of the Jewish people is based on this notion of our connection, you know, with Hashem. And I really think that it should motivate us even more this Purim, to sort of see in real time. We have seen in the last many months these kind of stories, right? The stories of people, whether they've never kept a Shabbos, stories of people, whether they've never, worn a yarmulke or made a kiddush or lit a menorah or put on tzitzis, there is an identity that this war has brought back to the Jewish people. It is modern day Mordechai HaYehudis, modern day Esther Hamalkas that are leading us from the front. But it's also a revival of the Jewish people. It's a revival of the Jewish spirit. Some things that we are witnessing, we can say, ah, this is the Purim story. This is Tanis Esther come to life. This is feelings of Divrei Hatzomos v'Zaakasam, that connection that Jewish people are having with each other. So as we celebrate this Purim, it should really be celebrated in that kind of same feeling, a feeling of connection, a feeling that we are in a very different place with all the horror and the terrible and the tragedies, but we are in a different place as an Am, and we should continue to be in that different place as a people in a more of a wake-up and of a connection, and that should lead us to really make this Purim even more meaningful and even more special.